Vishvam yadetat svatanau nishante. Yatha vakasham purusha paro bhavan. Bibharti soyam mama garbhako bhud. Aho nrilokasya vidambanam hitat. Vishvam yadet, personality of Godhead, to withdraw his opulent form of Vishnu. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti illuminates this fact very clearly in his explanation of this verse. Bhakti, Bhagavan, and Bhakta do not belong to the material world. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mam cha yo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in the spiritual activities of unalloyed devotional service immediately transcends the modes of material nature and is elevated to the spiritual platform. From the very beginning of one's transactions in bhakti, one is situated on the transcendental platform. Vasudev and Devaki, therefore, being situated in a completely pure devotional state, are beyond this material world and not subject to material fear. In the transcendental world, however, because of pure devotion, there is a similar conception of fear, which is due to intense love. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatvataha. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktyaham ekaya grayaha. Without bhakti, one cannot understand the spiritual situation of the Lord. Bhakti may be considered in three stages, called Gunibhuta, Pradhanibhuta, and Kevala. And according to these three stages, there are three divisions, which are called Gyan, Gyanamayi, and Rati or Prema. That is, simple knowledge, love mixed with knowledge, and pure love. By simple knowledge, one can perceive transcendental bliss without variety. This perception is called Manabhuti. When one comes to the stage of Jnanamayi, one realizes the transcendental opulence of the personality of Godhead. But when one reaches pure love, one realizes the transcendental form of the Lord as Lord Krishna or Lord Rama. This is what is wanted. Especially in the Madhurya Ras, one becomes attached to the personality of Godhead, Sri Vigraha Nishta Rupadi. Then loving transactions between the Lord and the devotee begin. The special significance of Krishna's bearing a flute in his hands in Brajbhumi, Vrindavan, is described as Madhuri, Virajate. The form of the Lord with a flute in his hands is most attractive, and the one who is most sublimely attracted is Srimati Radharani, Radhika. She enjoys supremely blissful association with Krishna. Sometimes people cannot understand why Radhika's name is not mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, however, Radhika can be understood from the word aradhana, which indicates that she enjoys the highest loving affairs with Krishna. Not wanting to be ridiculed for having given birth to Vishnu, Devaki wanted Krishna with two hands. Therefore, she requested the Lord to change his form. Om Akyan. That you please pray on our behalf. You give us God's will because we must understand through you. That is reality. What is the spiritual master? The spiritual master is the medium by which Krishna reciprocates with us. Krishna reveals the means by which we can know him and love him through the spiritual master. And Krishna accepts our offerings through the blessings and mercy of the spiritual master. So Lord Brahma sat down in intense meditation. And Lord Vishnu spoke to him within his heart. Thus he spoke the word of God to the devatas and to Mother Earth. That is Guru. The word of God and what they're supposed to do to reciprocate with the word of God. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. We inquire submissively from Guru and then we are willing to carry out whatever he speaks. That is service. So Brahma explained that Vishnu has spoken to me. That he already knows all your troubles. And he already has made all arrangements to solve your problems. Very soon, Krishna, Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will appear within this world as a son of Vasudeva and Devaki in the Yadu dynasty to rid the world of the burden of these demons. And he is requesting all of you to expand yourselves to take birth in the Yadu dynasty as well. Now Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard that some of these demigods and the wives of the demigods were very elevated personalities. When one becomes perfect in the discharge of devotional service, then after giving up this present body, one enters into a particular universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes. The Acharyas describe that within the manifested universes, there is always somewhere where Krishna is performing his pastimes. There are universes right now where Krishna is performing his lila. He performs his lila once in a day of Brahma in each universe. But there's unlimited universes. So a perfect soul enters into that particular planet where Krishna's performing his lila. And according to that particular devotee's devotional propensities, they live in either Vrindavan, Dwarka, or Mathura. And in the association of Krishna and the pure devotees that have descended from the spiritual world with him, those persons become completely pure. They get trained up. And then from there, when Krishna winds up that lila, they return to the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. So after hearing this message from Lord Brahma, all the demigods return to their abodes. Shukadeva Goswami continues that the son of Surasena, who was a king, previous king of the district of Mathura, was Vasudev, who had married the daughter of Devaka of the name Devaki. At the conclusion of their marriage ceremony, Kamsa, who happened to be the cousin brother of Devaki, decided to show his affection for his sister. So he actually accepted the humble position of chariot driver to drive them to their home. But the nature of his service was based on material affection. But through this story, we will find how thin material affection is when there is a threat to our own materialistic self-interest. So as they were happily driving through the night, a voice resounded from the sky. Kamsa, you are a fool. The eighth son, or the eighth child of your sister Devaki will be the cause of your death. Kamsa was infuriated. He grabbed Devaki by the hair and drew his sword, was about to sever her head. On the night of her wedding, Devaki was helpless. Kamsa was so powerful. His arms were so big and so strong that they had the strength 10,000 elephants. This is factually unimaginable. 10,000 elephants? One male elephant, if he crashes into this building, he'll break the pillars. One male elephant, these stone pillars we have outside, if he puts his trunk around and pulls with his weight, the whole building will come down. That's the power of one elephant. I have seen with my own eyes, elephants just effortlessly uproot trees and throw them. And that's Kali Yuga elephants. At the time of Kamsa, elephants were hundreds of times stronger than an elephant today. 10,000 elephants! He had the strength of 10,000 elephants in one of his arms. And he was holding little Devaki, a very sweet, innocent young lady. And with his other arm, he drew his sword. Vasudev pleaded with Kamsa. First he preached all nice philosophy that Kamsa, you're not this body. We're the eternal soul. The soul is traveling from one body to another body. We shouldn't commit crimes to protect this body that will condemn the true interest of our eternal soul. In essence, he was teaching him this. But Kamsa was so infuriated with false ego, he couldn't listen to any philosophy. Finally, Vasudev, who was such an honest, honorable man, promised that there's no danger from your sister. Any child that is born from Devaki, we will deliver to you, and you can do anything you like. The character of Vasudev was so great that even a demon like Kamsa trusted his words. So Devaki and Vasudev were set free. After some time, a beautiful child was born, Kirtiman by name. Vasudev, according to his word of honor, presented his little baby son to Kamsa. Kamsa told Vasudev, I have no fear from this son. He was really impressed that Vasudev was so true to his honor, he was willing to sacrifice his own son just to preserve his truthfulness. He said, it is your eighth son I'm concerned with. You may go. But Vasudev in his heart of heart knew he could not trust Kamsa because he was a man of low character who had no real control over his mind and senses. This is important. The mind is our greatest enemy when it is uncontrolled. How can we trust someone who is being controlled by his greatest enemy? Therefore, the only persons we could really trust are Krishna and those who are sincerely, honestly, earnestly trying to control their mind and senses in the service of Krishna. Those persons can actually be trusted. Otherwise, whether we trust our own mind or whether we trust the enemy of the mind coming through other people, we will be cheated. It's inevitable. Narada Muni came to meet Kamsa. Narada Muniji, when he arrived, Kamsa knew that there's great blessings by honoring such a celebrated sage as Narada Muni. So he had a very beautiful sitting place, and he welcomed Narada Muni, made nice offerings to him. Narada Muni explained that he was playing his veena and traveling from Brahmaloka to other parts of the universe, and he came to the very peak of Mount Sumeru, and there he saw a special meeting of the gods. You know what they were discussing, Kamsa? They were discussing their strategy to kill all the demons, and especially to kill the leader of the demons, you. And the demigods, they're going to be taking birth in the Yadu dynasty to kill you. So any of these children, you should be very cautious about. And then Narada Muni gave him further information. He said, your father, Ugrasena, he's not actually your father. Then Narada Muni told him his own Kamsa's history. Yet Ugrasena, such a very pious, pure-hearted king, had a very virtuous wife who was very faithful and chaste to him. One day during that time of the month that ladies observe, she and some of her maidservants went into the Suyama Mountain, which is so beautiful. On that particular day, Suyama Mountain was decorated with flowers of all varieties. And the sweet fragrance of those flowers were enchanting to the senses. There were sweet birds singing, waterfalls with clear water cascading, making beautiful songs. the environment excited. The wife of Ugrasena, Padma's senses. Meanwhile, as she was roaming through the gardens of the forest, there was a Danava named Drumala, who was the king of the province of Shobha. And he was on his airplane, and he wanted to see the Suyama mountain. He was with his charioteer. He got down and started walking around. He was also enticed and enchanted by the beautiful environment, just awake in such an enjoying spirit. And then from a distance, he saw the wife of Ugrasena. He turned to his charioteer and said, "Just see her thin waist, her broad hips, her beautiful face. Her gestures are maddening my mind. I'm trying to control my mind and senses, but it has become an impossible feat. I am a victim of her beauty. I must understand who she is and who is her husband." So Drumala, who was an asura of the Danava dynasty, he had powers. Now the Danavas are not human beings. They're a race of people that live much longer and have much greater power than human beings. They're like demigods, except they're against God instead of for God. The Danava dynasty is a race like demigods who have the power of the demigods, except they're envious. They're demoniac. That's why when there's fights, wars between demons and demigods, it's not the demons of this world. Demigods with one finger could crush them. But the Danavas, Kashyapa Muni had Aditi and Diti. From Diti came the demoniac race, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and all of the Danavas. That's their race. And Aditi had the demigods. They're equal in power, but they have very different intentions. So Drumala sat in meditation, and from his meditation, he could evaluate the identity of Padma, that she is the wife of Ugrasena. So by his mystic powers, he assumed a form identical to Ugrasena and approached her and spoke very nice words to her, and she spoke nice words to him. She was so happy to be reunited with her husband, who she loved and trusted and had such faith in. And due to the environment, and due to his own great, great prowess, he united with her. As this relationship was taking place, Padma sensed that this person's touch is much harder than my husband. This is not my husband. So she became outraged. I'm a chaste woman. I've given my heart, my soul, my life to be faithful to my husband. And you have corrupted me. You have defiled my vows. You have cheated me of the most precious thing I have, my chastity to my husband. You are condemned. Drumala, when he heard these harsh words from Padma, he became very angry. Like fire, he spoke back. He said, I have not defiled your vows, you foolish woman. Do you not understand the benediction I have given you? He said, morality and chastity is amongst human beings like you and your husband. But I am Danava. I am a race above human beings. To unite with a person of a higher position, of a higher race, is not defiling the chastity. Rather, it's a benediction. And then he explained how I am so powerful. I am so great. You are such a fool. You are so ignorant. You are thinking that the greatest benediction that has ever come in your life is a curse. Because you addressed me with the word custom, which means, who are you? Therefore, you will have a son whose name will be Kamsa. This is the benediction I give you. You will be the mother of Kamsa. Kamsa will be such a great personality, he will conquer all of his enemies. The wife of Ugrasena did not like that benediction. She became outraged in anger. She said, I curse. I give you this curse. That the Supreme Purusha, the personality of Godhead, will take birth in the family of my husband. And he will kill you, and he will kill your son, Kamsa. Hare Krishna. So Drumala got on his plane and went back to his abode. Narada Muni is explaining this history to Kamsa. Then he explains something else. Do you know, that's how you were born this time. But shall I tell you about your previous births? Kamsa was very interested to know this. Narada Muni revealed. He said, previously, you were an asura, Danava, demon, of the name Kalanemi. There was a great battle between the Devatas and the Asuras. The leader of the Devatas, of the demons at that time, was Taraka. He assembled his armies. And he had Maya Danava and yourself as his main generals. The demigods were conquering the demons. But then you appeared in the battlefield. Kalanemi. He was so powerful. He was not just an ordinary demon. He was the most powerful amongst all of them. He had 100 arms and 100 heads. When he roared, planets shook. He had such strength in each of his 100 arms, tens and thousands of elephants' power was there. He came into the battlefield and single-handedly, Kalanemi was just devastating the entire demigod army. The demigods were helpless against him. They turned to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu appeared on Garuda the weapons in his hands, he stood before Kalanemi. Kalanemi was so strong, he picked up a club and threw it at Garuda's head, and Garuda fell to the ground unconscious. Lord Vishnu was outraged that he committed this offense to Garuda. He took his chakra and cut off all 100 arms of Kalanemi. Then he took his chakra and cut off all his 100 heads. But Kalanemi was so powerful, no arms, no head, he still stood like a formidable tree. And then Garuda, just to get back at him, took his wing and knocked that trunk over to the ground. Narada Muni said, "You were Kalanemi in your last life. Vishnu killed you. And he's coming back to try to kill you again. I'm just informing you of these things for your information." Not those words, but something like that. And then Narada Muni left. Kamsa was outraged. "Vishnu, my enemy of my previous birth, who's killed me before, is coming, and the demigods are coming in the Yadu dynasty to help him to kill me." He was overwhelmed with fear. So he arrested Devaki and Vasudev and put them in shackles in prison. In the prison of Kamsa, Vasudev and Devaki, actually, he also took their child, Kirtiman, and taking their feet with his hands, with those mighty arms of Kamsa, he dashed the infant newborn child against a rock until it was dead. Right in the presence of his sister. Six consecutive childs were killed in that way. From the Haribamsa, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains who were those children. It is explained there that Krishna approached Yogamaya and told her about these children. What happened is, one of the great sons of Lord Brahma is Marichi, very, very great sage. He was born of Brahma's mind. Therefore, he's considered to be symbolic of the mind. Marichi had six sons who were very, very, very powerful, very intelligent. One time, they happened to see Lord Brahma, their grandfather, behaving in a very unconventional way. So they had doubts about him and actually spoke sarcastically about Brahma. Because they misjudged a great soul, because they judged a very, very elevated personality by material considerations, they were cursed. Now, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically uses this example that we should not estimate a great personality simply with our mundane conceptions. Because even if they apparently do something wrong, we do not understand what is it that the Lord is doing through that person. So they had to take birth as six sons of Kalanemi. They were very, very powerful. According to Srila Prabhupada, they also took birth as the six sons of Hiranyakashipu. Some say that actually Hiranyakashipu was their grandfather. So we'll go by that particular point of view. Kalanemi was their father. Hiranyakashipu was a grandfather. So these six sons, they decided to perform tapasya to get benedictions from Lord Brahma. Brahma appeared to them, offered them any benediction. The benediction that they desired was that we will never be conquered in battle. That neither the demigods, nor the Gandharvas, nor the Kinaras, nor the sages, or the yogis, or the rishis, no one would be able to defeat us. Brahma gave them that benediction. Now Hiranyakashipu, their grandfather, when he heard that they directly approached Brahma and got boons from him, he was inflamed with anger. How could they possibly go to Brahma without his permission? Why they gave up his association for a demigod? He told them, I have lost all affection for you. You have become my enemies because you have defied my control. I curse you. I curse you that you will go into deep sleep in the ocean of the nether worlds, the lower planets, for a long, long time. And in your next birth, just after you are born, your own father, Kalanemi, will appear as Kamsa and kill you. So these Sadgarbhas are explained by Srila Prabhupada to represent the six enemies that are born of the mind. Marichi is mind, and the six enemies of the mind, born of the mind, are lust, anger, pride, greed, envy, and illusion. Devaki represents bhakti or devotion. Kamsa represents fear of material existence. So the devotee, Devaki, in order to annihilate these enemies within their mind, must have healthy fear of material existence represented by Kamsa. That is why our philosophy is so important. Simply hearing the leelas of the Lord is absolutely purifying, but unless we have healthy fear of material existence, we won't really take shelter of the Lord. But when there is fear of sinful activities, fear of lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, and illusion, when we have fear of these things, and we fight against them, and we take shelter of the Lord when they approach us, then these obstacles are killed. Just as Kamsa killed the six enemies of the mind. Then Krishna told Yogamaya that after these six children are awakened from the deep ocean and the nether worlds, one after another, they should be born of Devaki and they will be killed by Kamsa. And then I will send my first expansion, Shankarshan, Balaram, to enter into the womb of Devaki. During the seventh month of her pregnancy, you should transfer her to the womb of Rohini. And then I will personally enter into Devaki's heart. And you should appear as my younger sister in the heart, the womb of Yashoda, the wife of the king of Braja, Nanda Maharaj. Yogamaya transferred Lord Balaram during the seventh month of Devaki's pregnancy into Rohini's womb. Now, how that happened is explained in Harivamsa. Rohini Devi, who was a wife of Vasudev, she was actually the senior most wife of Vasudev, Rohini. She was sent by her husband to Gokul Mahaban to be protected by Nanda Maharaj, his dear, most loving friend, while he was in prison with his wife Devaki. Rohini was pregnant. She was in her seventh month of pregnancy. At midnight, one night, she had a horrible dream. Rohini Devi dreamed that she was suffering a miscarriage, that the child in her womb had died. She woke up from her dream and found that it was true. The child within her womb was gone. She began to lament. Yogamaya appeared before her, explained to Rohini that I have personally come to transfer the child from Devaki's womb into your womb, which is replacing your child. Because this child has been transferred from Devaki's womb, his name will be Shankarshan. Do not be afraid. This is all the will of the Supreme. Rohini was pregnant with Lord Sri Balaram. Now, according to the scriptures and the acharyas, Rohini is the eternal mother of Balaram. Therefore, the Lord transferred Baladev into her womb. In the spiritual world, Rohini is eternally mother of Balaram. And some acharyas also explain that the original Balaram was in Rohini's womb, and the Balaram of the Shankarshan of Devaki merged into him. Just after this incident, it appeared to the people of Kamsa's palace that Devaki had a miscarriage. Her seventh child had died. Just after this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared within the heart of Vasudev. Just like when the moon rises, the sun sends its light to illuminate the moon. In the same way, from the heart of Vasudev, Krishna entered into the heart of Devaki. She became pregnant. She became so beautiful. The Lord was within her heart. The Lord was growing within her. She was so effulgent, like hundreds of suns. When Kamsa saw her beauty and effulgence, he realized the eighth child of Devaki is now within her womb. She was constantly under guard, so he could kill that infant child as soon as it was born. Note that even the most envious, rascal, conceited demons like Kamsa would not stoop so low to abortion. That was considered abominable, condemnable, and below the morality even of the worst blood-sucking demons. Hare Krishna. So there was a 24-hour guard waiting for the child to be born. Eight months passed. The Lord was within the womb of Devaki. The demigods appeared within the cell of Kamsa to offer their prayers and obeisances to the child within the womb. Beautiful prayers, which are revealed to us in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. On the full moon night, during the Shraddha month, Shravan month, Balaramji appeared. He appeared in Gokul Mahavan as the son of Rohini. And just a few days after that was the auspicious time for the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna. It is explained herein that on this day of Janamastami, everything became auspicious. The moon was in its fullest state, even though it was not a full moon night. The reason? Because the Supreme Personality of God was going to take birth in the dynasty of Chandra, the god of the moon. So much auspiciousness. All flowers from all seasons were blossoming. All fruits of all seasons were blossoming. The auspicious constellation of Rohini was presiding in the sky. The star Aswini. The night was considered Jayanti. It was all auspicious. All the sages and Brahmins who were persecuted so terribly by Kamsa had very peaceful minds. There was celestial fragrances, sweet winds. There was prosperity and auspiciousness everywhere on the earth. At that auspicious moment of midnight, the Supreme Lord appeared outside of the womb of Devaki. He had four arms, holding the conch shell disc, club, and lotus flower. He had Kaustubha Mani, beautiful ornaments and clothes. Vasudeva and Devaki saw that Lord Vishnu had appeared as their son. They offered their surrendered obeisances as his lotus feet. Vasudeva offered prayers. You are the Supreme Lord, the cause of all causes. You have appeared in this world out of your causeless mercy. After Vasudeva offered beautiful prayers of pure unalloyed devotion, Devaki offered her prayers. So we will begin class now. Containing all created moving and non-moving entities, enters your transcendental body and is held there without difficulty. But now this transcendental form has taken birth from my womb. People will not be able to believe this, and I shall become an object of ridicule. This is the verse we are reading today. Out of fear of Kamsa, Devaki is asking Krishna, Vishnu, to appear like a regular child. And Srila Prabhupada is here explaining that when one is a pure devotee who takes shelter of the Lord, one becomes fearless. Actually, even in a preliminary state of transcendental consciousness, of Brahman realization, we become fearless. Because we realize we're not this body. We realize the soul is beyond birth and death. So there's nothing to fear. But in the higher levels of pure love, the variegatedness within the intensity of our affection for Krishna sometimes bring us about fear. Not fear for ourselves, but fear for the well-being and the happiness of the Lord who is the object of our love. So here Srila Prabhupada is explaining that Devaki's fear for the welfare of Krishna is on a much higher, intense spiritual platform than the fearlessness of the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis. Because love is reciprocal. Love is personal. And the transcendental varieties of how that love is exchanged is the beauty of the spiritual world. In bhakti, there is emotion. For some people who are less informed of transcendental states of consciousness, they think that a really great sage is one who is simply unmoved, unaffected by anything. That is a state of shanti for the impersonalists. But the devotees are very intensely emotional because their hearts are endowed with love, love for Krishna, and always eager to reciprocate with the love for Krishna. Herein, Prabhupada is explaining, within the realm of pure devotional service, there is five rasas, or five relationships of devotion that we can have with Krishna. First is Shantaras. Shantaras is love in neutrality. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he personally came to give the four rasas of love in service, friendship, parenthood, and conjugal lover. Now here Srila Prabhupada is explaining that in these four higher rasas of servitude, friendship, parenthood, and conjugal love, there is that which is recognizing the Aishwarya, or the supreme spiritual opulences of the Lord, and those where the love becomes so intense and so pure that our love is not even conditional to the Lord possessing these opulences. And Prabhupada is giving the example of the difference between Devaki and Yashoda. Devaki realized that Krishna was God. Therefore, she offered obeisances and prayers to him in motherly love. She loved Krishna as a mother, but with great reverence, because he's God. But we'll find in the story that when Krishna was born to Yashoda, Yashoda had no conception that he's God. He did not appear to her in a four-armed form. He appeared to her as an innocent, apparently helpless little baby. And therefore Yashoda simply cried in ecstatic motherly love, thinking that my child is completely dependent on me. So Prabhupada here is explaining this love, which is only possible in Vrindavan, is the purest, highest level of ecstasy, because it is unconditional, where Krishna completely gives himself to his devotees. After Devaki Mataji offers her prayers, the Supreme Lord speaks. He explains how previously Devaki and Vasudev were Prishni and Sutapa. They were performing 12,000 celestial years of austerity. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared to them and bestowed any benediction upon them. Out of their love for the Lord, Prishni and Sutapa prayed that we wish to have a child just like you. He appeared as Prishni Garbha, avatar of Lord Vishnu, as the son of Prishni and Sutapa. And in your next life, Sutapa became Kashyapa and Prishni became Aditi. And I again appeared as your child, Upendra. Because I was very small, like a dwarf, I am also known in that avatar as Vamanadev. And now for the third time, I have taken birth as your child. And after this life, you will return back home, back to Godhead. Then he told Vasudev that you should, according to your desire, I will appear as an ordinary child. You should take me across river Jamuna to Gokul Mahavan, and there exchange me with the baby that has just been born of Yashoda, and bring her back here. After the Lord spoke, He transformed his majestic form of Narayan to the beautiful, heart-enchanting form of Balgopal. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, later cantos, Devaki fed him breast milk just so that he would be nourished for the journey. Something miraculous took place. All the chains of the shackles loosened. All the doors and gates opened. And everyone in the palace, Kamsa and all of his guards, fell into deep sleep. This was the arrangement of Yogamaya. Vasudev took that little child outside. It was storming rain. Anantashesha appeared as the servant of the Lord and acted like an umbrella so that not even a single drop of water was there to disturb Gopal. The river Jamuna was swirling with flood, but she made a passageway so that Vasudev can easily cross her. When Vasudev arrived at Gokul, everyone was fast asleep. In fact, Yashoda Mai, when she gave birth to the child, she was, by Yogamaya's potency, she fell asleep. And she didn't even recognize who was born. Vasudev then placed baby Krishna at Yashoda's side and took the baby girl, Yogamaya, and brought her back to Mathura. When he arrived back in the prison cell, little Yogamaya started to cry, and everyone woke up. Immediately, the news came to Kamsa. He came running down. The cruel cause of my death has now appeared. He grabbed the little child. Devaki tried to protect him, but to no avail. Devaki was begging Kamsa, "Please, you've already killed 6 of my sons. This is a daughter. There is no danger from a daughter. Grant me this one benediction. Let me be her mother." But Kamsa was so cruel, heartless, evil. He took the legs of that little baby girl and lifted up to smash her against the stone. But the child slipped right out of his hands and ascended into the sky, where she manifested her form of Durga, with 8 arms holding various weapons. She proclaimed to Kamsa that, "Why have you created such evil activities against your own sister? Abominable." The 8th son of Devaki is elsewhere, and he will be the cause of your death. Then Yogamaya ascended to her abode. When Kamsa heard this sobering words, he became very repentant. "What have I done to my own sister? I killed 6 of your children." He actually fell at the feet of Devaki and Vasudeva with his head and begged forgiveness. And then he prayed. He said, actually, I'm very sorry for what I've done, but you should know that I'm not the doer. It is all destiny. Due to the influence of time and the power of providence, this has all been done. So please forgive me and be peaceful. Devaki, such a magnanimous, soft-hearted lady. She completely forgave Kamsa for all of his atrocities. He kept them in prison. He murdered six of their children. He was constantly tormenting them. She forgave him. She said, actually, you are not the one that killed my children. It is all the destiny. It is all the inconceivable will of the higher powers of the Lord. So Kamsa freed Devaki and Vasudeva from their prison. And he went back to his inner chambers, both confused, repentant, and angry. Association is very powerful. The ministers, colleagues, and friends of Kamsa, they began speaking to him, filling his mind with all poison. They told Kamsa, if Vishnu's somewhere else, why should you sit here and repent? We should kill every child that's born in the entire countryside. Why should we worry about the devatas? You are so powerful that they are all obsessed with fear of you. So Kamsa became very, very upset. Again he put Devaki and Vasudeva in jail and ordered every child to be murdered within his kingdom. Meanwhile, actually that took place a little later. We would like to explain, according to Jiva Goswami and Gopal Champu, enhancing details to this story of the birth of Krishna, which are described in its basic foundational form in Srimad Bhagavatam. There was a great king whose name was Devaida. He had a Kshatriya wife and a Vaishya wife, and he had a son from each of them. The son from his Kshatriya wife was Surasena, and the son from his Vaishya wife was named Parjanya. Surasena became the king of Mathura. At one time long ago, in the Treta Yuga, there was a demon named Madhu. Very, very, very unconquerable asura who lived in a forest. And because his name was Madhu, the forest was called Madhuban. He had a son named Lavana. Lavana was even more powerful than his father. At that time, Lord Sri Ramchandra was the king of Ayodhya. The sages and the rishis from that area near Madhuban came to Ram to appeal to him that this Lavanasura is creating havoc. He drinks blood, he eats human flesh, he will not allow any moral or spiritual or religious activities to take place. You are the king. Please protect us from him. In the meanwhile, Lavanasura heard about Ram being a very, very powerful personality. So he sent a messenger to Sri Ramchandra. The messenger came to Ayodhya and told Lord Ram that I am speaking the words of Lavana. He says you are just an insignificant, useless person, and he's going to come and destroy you. Said, you think you're great because you killed Ravana? Ravana was nothing. Ravana was not powerful because Ravana could not control his lust. Because Ravana was overcome by passion for Sita and for other women. Therefore, he became weak. So it was not a great thing to kill such a weakling. But I am Lavana. I perform severe tapasya. I have complete control of my senses. You will die at my hands. So Satrughna, the youngest brother of Ram, brother of Lakshman, son of Sumitra, he volunteered, Ram, let me go there as your representative. Let me do something. So Ram gave all his blessings and Shatrughna went to Madhuban. While there, Lavanasura, he was such a demon. He would have a trident or a spear, and just a few minutes of his hunting, he would have gigantic elephants, lions, tigers, gigantic pythons, all on one spear. There's a certain type of preparation people make similar to that. Satrughna challenged him to battle. And it was a very, very good fight. This is described in our scriptures. And ultimately, Satrughna killed him. And after killing Lavanasura, he became the king on behalf of Ram. And he excavated that Madhuban area and built, Satrughna personally built, the magnificent, unparalleled city of Mathura. According to Shukadeva Goswami, Mathura is the eternal abode of Lord Krishna. Whenever the Lord appears within this world, he appears within Mathura in Vrindavan. From the Raghu dynasty, the kingdom was transferred to Surasena and the great kings of the Yadu dynasty. So Surasena, he had a child of the named Vasudev. And Parjanya had five sons, Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sunanda, and Nandan. Parjanya was an ocean of divine qualities. His heart was pure with love for the Supreme Lord. Because Parjanya was so gracious, so kind, so pure in heart, the cowherd community of Mahaban unanimously made him the king of the cowherdsmen, or the gopas and gopis. When Parjanya was getting old, he decided to retire from his position as the king of the cowherd men. And he placed Upananda, his eldest son, as the king, so that he could completely focus all of his attentions on worshipping Lord Krishna. Upananda, although the eldest brother, appreciated so deeply the qualities of his younger brother, Nanda, that he presented to the people of Gokul that I wish to make him the king and I will be his minister. Isn't this wonderful? Srila Prabhupada explains in modern days what people do to become kings. Kamsa imprisoned his own father, Ugrasena, stepfather anyway. And not only that, but he was willing to kill all his nephews just to sit on that throne. Prabhupada gives the historical event of Aurangzeb. He killed his brothers. He killed his cousins, his nephews. And he put his own father in prison just so that he could be king. That desire, that greed for power is so deeply rooted in the conditioned soul's heart. But Upananda, he was being given his rightful position of the king of Gokul, where there was over 900,000 cows. But because of his love for his younger brother, he appreciated his magnanimity, his devotion, his kindness, that he gave the kingdom to Nanda Maharaj. So Nanda Maharaj became king, and everyone of Gokul was simply blissful, living such a wonderful life under the protective, auspicious blessings of Nanda Maharaj. There was a gopa of the name Sumukha. Sumukha had a beautiful daughter. It is said that anyone who remembered his daughter or spoke the name of his daughter or even saw the beauty of his daughter, that person would become enriched in auspiciousness and fame. So he named her Yashoda. The Gopa Sumukha married Yashodamayi to Nanda Maharaj. This only increased the bliss of the Brijbasis. But as the years went by, there was sadness in everyone's heart. Because despite attempts, Nanda and Yashoda did not have any child. It is most vital that the king produces, educates, and trains a child to take on the responsibilities after him. And not only that, Nanda and Yashoda had a deep longing within their heart for a child. And because the Brijabasis loved them so much, their pain was the pain of the Brijabasis. Many of the, practically the whole of the cowherd community decided to have fasts, to not wear ornaments, to do all kinds of austerities until Nanda and Yashoda have a child. Something extraordinary was regularly taking place. In regular dreams, simultaneously, Nanda and Yashoda would see this most beautiful baby child appear within their hearts. The child had a complexion like a monsoon rain cloud, beautiful lotus-like eyes. His every limb was the very essence of the perfection of beauty. They fell in love with the child. They gave their hearts, their souls, They're everything to this beautiful child. They longed that that child and no one else be their son. As no child was coming, the Vrijabhasis performed a big yajna for the sake of having a son. But Nanda and Yashoda were not concerned with these yajnas. But they personally performed a Dwadasi Vrata specifically for the purpose that that person that appears within their dream will become their son. At the fulfillment of their vrata in a dream, simultaneously to Nanda and Yashoda, Lord Narayan appeared to them and told them, do not be in any anxiety. That child who appears in your dream, that child who has given your life, who you have given your heart to, will now become your child. Then Narayan disappeared, and the child entered from the heart of Nanda Maharaj into the heart of Yashoda. Nanda and Yashoda explained this wonderful dream to the Vrijabhasis. They were celebrating in great joy. And soon Yashoda showed the symptoms of pregnancy. She became extraordinary, effulgent, and beautiful. The child remained within her womb for 8 months. It is explained, actually, when Yashoda saw that child coming from Nanda Maharaj into her heart, there was a beautiful little girl in front of him. And they both entered. According to Jiva Goswami, Krishna entered the heart, and the little girl who was Yogamaya entered her womb. And on the day of Janmashtami, Yashodamai gave birth to twins. The elder brother was Krishna, the younger sister was Yogamaya. At the time that Lord Narayan turned into a baby in the prison cell of Kamsa, at that moment, Krishna, the son of Yashoda, was brought by Yogamaya to Mathura. And Lord Narayan merged into this beautiful little baby son of Yashoda. And then Yogamaya went all the way back. She can do things very quickly. And laid beside Yashoda Mayi. So when Vasudev brought the little baby, he was actually bringing Yashoda's child back to him. And his child was merged into as a plenary portion of Krishna. And then he took Yogamaya back to Mathura. So this is what Srila Prabhupada, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and our great Vaishnava scriptures declare, that actually the original Krishna, Govinda, was born of Yashoda. And the partial expansion, Krishna, was born of Devaki and Vasudev. When Yashoda Mayi woke up and saw the essence of all attraction, Lord Gopal laying by her side as a helpless infant, her heart just bursted in ecstatic love. The other gopis came in, and they just picked up that child and held to their hearts, put on top of their heads, put in front of their eyes. They just actually, all the Brijabasis consider Krishna their own child. That is the power of Krishna's attractive beauty. There was no one envious that Yashoda and Nanda has a better child than mine. Everyone loved Nanda and Yashoda so much, everyone loved Krishna as if Krishna was their own child. So can you imagine the celebration that took place in Nanda Gokul on the day of Nandotsav? The gopis sent a Brahmin, wife of a Brahmin, to give Nanda Maharaj the good news. He was milking cows at the time with Upananda, Abhinanda, Sunanda, Nandan. And this Brahmani came in with gifts. She was so speechless. Her body was showing such symptoms of ecstasy that immediately Nanda Maharaj and others could understand the child has been born. And when the Brahmani finally proclaimed that Nanda Maharaj, a beautiful child is born to you, the cowherd men were dancing in ecstasy. Nanda Maharaj was so happy. And the way pious people show their happiness is giving in charity. Upananda and Nanda Maharaj offered every cow, and there were thousands of cows, every cow that was being milked and every cow that was going to be milked would all be given in charity to this Brahmani who came with the good news. And anything else you want. Nanda Maharaj went home to bathe, and on his way to the place of the birth of Krishna, he was so stunned, practically paralyzed. He didn't know if he was walking or not walking. Somehow or other, he made it to that place. And when Upananda's, his eldest brother's wife, presented the little baby Krishna to him, and he held it in her arms, ecstatic tears profusely fell from his eyes as his hair stood on end in ecstasy. And when Yashoda Mayi was given the news of how happy Nanda Maharaj was, her heart filled with unlimited joy. They performed Abhishekam for the child. The Brahmins were for chanting auspicious hymns for the child's protection. There was dancing, singing, musicians playing. Every Brijabasi considered the child like their own. From the very appearance of Krishna, from the first sight of this little baby Gopal, all the Brijabasis love Gopal more than their own children, more than their own wealth, more than their own lives. He became the very life, the soul, the everything. The only ambition in anyone's heart was simply to make Krishna happy. In their dancing and their singing, Prabhupada explains, they were sharing the opulence of Braj. The opulence of Braj is the ghee and the yogurt and the milk and the butter. So very lavishly, they were lovingly throwing butter and yogurt upon each other. And they colored it in various ways with natural minerals. Thus, the wonderful narration of Krishna's appearance in this world. Just after Krishna appeared, and the festival of Nandotsav was celebrated, Nanda Maharaj had to pay taxes in Mathura. After paying his taxes to the king Kamsa, he went to visit his dear friend Vasudev. Vasudev knew that Krishna and Balaram were both born within less than 2 weeks apart, both baby infant children. He was very deeply concerned for both of their welfare because he knew of the atrocious plans of Kamsa. Without speaking anything directly, he advised Nanda Maharaj that you should go back very soon for the protection of your children. Take very, very good care of them, please. And please consider my child the same as yours and give him the same love and affection. Meaning Balaram. Meanwhile, while Nanda Maharaj was away, Kamsa was sending his demons to kill all children. One was named Putana. She was a Kechari, which is a type of a witch, where they have great mystic powers. They could change their form according to their desire. They can fly on broomsticks. Thousands and thousands of babies she would kill, eat their flesh and drink their blood. Rakshashi. According to Haribams, by Vyasdev, she entered Gokul in the form of a bird. And then she assumed the form, because otherwise if she came in like Putana, people would have taken notice of her right away. So she came in as a little bird and then took the form of a most beautiful woman. So beautiful! She walked with such elegance that the people thought that she must be a demigoddess. She's come to bless our child, Krishna. They had complete faith and trust in her on the basis of her appearance. She entered into the maternity ward of Yashoda. She looked at the little baby Krishna, was just born within a couple days of now. She looked at Krishna, and in her heart she could understand he is death personified. And Krishna looked at Putana and closed his eyes. Srila Prabhupada, quoting from the great souls, describes there are many reasons Krishna closed his eyes. One is paritranaya sarunam vinashaya chaduskritam. He comes to protect the devotees, he comes to annihilate the demons and to reestablish religious principles. This is going to be the first demon he has to kill. And it's a woman. Women are supposed to be protected. And not only a woman, but she's coming as a beautiful woman in the role of a mother. So he closed his eyes. Others say he closed his eyes because she was such a notorious, evil-hearted person. He knew all the children she killed helplessly. Therefore he closed his eyes. She appeared in such a way that everyone had such faith and trust in her. The Bhagavatam describes she was like a deadly sword in a very well decorated sheath or encasing. Although Krishna was more dear to the Brijavasis than their life, they happily allowed this strange woman to pick him up, put him on her lap, and then she placed her breast in his mouth. She had anointed her breast with such a deadly poison that it had the strength of killing hundreds of grown men. Her singular intent was to murder Gopal. And Gopal knew it. He very eagerly suckled upon her breast. He suckled. First thing, he drank out all the poison. Then he kept sucking. And he actually got her. Milk started coming out. He sucked out all the poison. He sucked out all the milk. He continued to suck until he began to suck out her very life force. This became so unbearably painful to Putana. She tried with all her power to take him off, but she couldn't. Then she ran outside the house. The Brijabasis were shocked. All of a sudden, she's screaming and running outside with baby Krishna still attached to her breast. When she got out into the pasture grounds, she resumed her original form, which was 12 miles high. And Krishna was still the same size, holding on and sucking. Not only was he sucking, but he was squeezing. It was unbearably painful. She was screaming, "Child, leave me, child, leave me." With all of her rakshachi supernatural powers, she was trying to take this little Krishna, but he just squeezed, held on, and sucked until her very life force departed. And she fell to the ground, creating an earthquake. The residents of Vrindavan came running to see what is the trouble. And there they saw this gigantic Rakshasi demon. Her belly looked like a dried up lake. Her legs were like riverbanks. Her fingers were like bridges. Her breasts were like mountains. Her teeth were like big plows. Her eyes were like sunken wells. Her hair was like big shrubs. They were very much afraid for Gopal. But Gopal was just crawling around, happily preying on her body. So gopis came running, 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 running. It must have been a long way. And somehow they climbed up Putana's body and they brought little baby Krishna back to Yashoda. Yashoda Mai had baby Gopal. And she was very much afraid for him. The ladies started chanting all different protective mantras. But it is, Prabhupada explains, that when a child very healthy and enthusiastically sucks the milk from mother, that is a sign of good health and auspiciousness. So Krishna very enthusiastically drank Yashoda's milk, so she considered, yes, everything is all right. Meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj is coming back, rushing back, because Vasudev said, "Be careful, protect Krishna and Balaram." When he and the cowherd man returned from Mathura to Mahavan, there they saw this gigantic 12-mile Rakshasi Putana laying down. What is this? What is this? Could Krishna have been harmed? They hurried, and there they saw Krishna very blissfully in the arms of Yashoda. Nanda Maharaj was struck with wonder at the intuitive wisdom of Vasudev, his dearmost friend. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that this early pastime of Krishna's life is very, very instructive. God is always God. Prabhupada would use this pastime as an illustration to defeat the illogical teachings of people who claim that you can become God. That you are God, I am God, everyone is God. But we have forgotten due to illusion, due to Maya. But if you chant mantra, meditate, study the scriptures, perform tapasya, or give me your money, then you will become God. Prabhupada considered this cheating. God never forgets he's God. God is the controller of all controllers. Krishna, from his infancy, displayed the supreme powers of the Absolute Truth. Whether Krishna is showing his universal form on the field of Kurukshetra, or whether Krishna is laying in the bed of Yashoda as a helpless baby who doesn't even know how to walk, he's always the supreme Absolute Truth. He always possesses all six opulences in full. This is Krishna. Thakur Bhaktivinoda explains that this demon Putana represents the pseudo-guru. Who teaches us artha, dhamma, kama, moksha. Who teaches us sometimes that he is God, or that you are God, or that we all God. Or if you worship me, if you follow me, then you will get wealth, economic security. You will get better sense gratification, or you will get liberation. There are so many gurus who are teaching not according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Evam parampara praptam. Unless we receive knowledge through Guru parampara, we do not know whether the knowledge is really the truth or whether it is manufactured or partially manufactured by a person's false ego. So these pseudo-gurus, they appear as your best well-wishing friend. They appear in such a guise that you put your faith in them, just like the Brijabasis put their faith in Putana. Because of the way she appeared, because of the way she looked, because of the way she spoke. But actually, if we hear what they say, we drink their poison, the poison of their materialistic conceptions. And that poison kills our propensity to love and serve Krishna. So we must be very, very careful. When people speak, it appears like ambrosial milk. And it may be milk. People may speak the scriptures, but their misconceptions are like poison mixed within that milk, which has a deadly effect on our spiritual lives. One of the great obstacles on the path of pure devotional service is to put our faith in people, put our spiritual faith in people who are not striving for unalloyed devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna. Krishna and Balaram grew up in Vrindavan. They appear to be such helpless baby children.